Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston, and join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Merry Christmas, Melanie.
It's too early for Merry Christmas.
No, see, you're not a podcast professional like I am. See, as people are receiving this, it's Christmas Eve at least.
I know, but it's not Christmas for me yet.
I married Mrs. Literal. Yes, you're very rigid on these things. The Pope has said things about rigid people, you know. That wasn't a raspberry at the Pope. It was a raspberry at me, I would assume.
You know, if he was saying the same things to me that you are, he might get a raspberry.
Heresy. You're one of those Catholics. Anyway, let's not get into that. What's been going on? Let's backtrack up. But last time we talked to you, it would just been the third Sunday of Advent. As we record this, it is now the fourth Sunday of Advent. We had told you that we bought our tree last week, and now we set it up, and we got the lights on it, and we got it decorated, as one is wont to do.
Yes,
we decorate. Everyone does. Some people, I just heard like a couple. They put the lights on the tree first, and then they put the decorations on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I've also heard of people doing like a couple ornaments a day. Like everybody puts on one a day, and that's how they count down to Christmas.
That seems like a lot of tracking of things. That's a lot of work.
Well, if you just had the bin sitting next to the tree.
Ugh. It sounds like a bigger house than ours. I kind of get the put the bulbs on Christmas Eve, but we'll talk about the ornaments. Yeah, I get that. But our Christmas Eve is busy. We're going to talk about what our Christmas Eve is like here. What our is generally, but our Christmas Eve, it just feels like that would be just another busy thing.
And it would be one more thing to put on the to-do list, another thing to do.
Yeah. So we'll tell you a bit about what our Christmas Eves are like, what we tend to do in a bit. But yeah, that would seem like a lot. But one thing we do every year is or at least the last few years, I don't know how many years in a row I've done this. I should go back and look. But I set up a camera and I do a time-lapse video of decorating the tree, which is kind of fun.
The kids really like it.
Oh boy, do they
like
love it.
They like watching it this year's and then looking back on previous years.
Yeah, yeah. I use my iPhone. I put it on a tripod. I set the time lapse going, and then I'll last year I had two. I think I had your phone and my phone going. This year I just had my phone, and I moved it halfway through. So, which is fun. Now, the fun thing is, as we talked about last time, our tree isn't very large. So getting all of our ornaments on the tree, that tree is packed. It is full of ornaments, which is good. I like a packed tree.
I guess it's packed. I never thought of it as being especially packed.
There's hardly a place to put another ornament on the tree.
I could put a lot more ornaments on the tree.
It's like a fridge. It is always simultaneously full, but there's still room to put more things in it.
I guess.
That's how I think of the tree. How's your Advent gone, Melanie?
Yeah.
Yeah? A little more?
I don't know. It's been Advent.
I mean, do you feel like, what is Advent to you? Is it a time for you to grow deeper in prayer? Is it a time to run around and get things done and prepare for Christmas? What is Advent for you?
Well, it would be nice if it were a time for growing deeper in prayer. I feel like I tend to fail at that miserably. But then again, I almost feel like the planning to do it and then failing is kind of part of the process. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, it's like Lent for me every year. It's like Lent has more structure. What are you giving up for Lent? You have to, fast on Fridays and, the whole, the abstinence and, it has you know, a lot of places will have simple supper Fridays and go to confession on Wednesday, you know, all that stuff. Advent doesn't really have that same amount of structure.
Right. Well, I mean, I suppose for like Orthodox and Eastern Catholics, they actually do fast during Advent.
Right.
Which I think, on one hand, I think if we sort of had a rule that we had to keep a fasting, I could probably do it. But without somebody imposing that from without, I just, it's not the kind of thing I would like voluntarily just say, well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to.
Well, given all of the birthdays and feasts and other things that fall during Advent,
it would require a radical restructuring of how I've always done it.
Yeah.
Which I like I said, it would be feasible, but it would be rethinking Advent sort of from the ground up.
Yes.
So I guess what we do is sort of gradually ease into the celebratory season. I feel like we don't throw up the decorations the day after Thanksgiving or before. We kind of ease into it as Advent goes on. We do a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more.
One box will come out and another box. The wreath will go on the door one day. St. Nicholas Day will come around and some things will get out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really sweet little novella by Madeleine Lingle called The 24 Days Till Christmas. It's got some of her characters from some of her other books, the Austin family. And it's sort of their family's tradition is to do one thing that's kind of preparing for Christmas every day for the 24 days and from December 1st. And it's a sweet book. In the book, in the story, they have a new baby who's born on Christmas Eve, which they don't know, of course, that the baby's going to be born on Christmas Eve. It's just what happens. And I kind of like that idea of like doing one Christmassy thing a day, but that's even way too much structure for me. That's like, wait, that would require organization and planning. And I feel like we sort of have the slacker version of that where we kind of do sort of one thing kind of most days, but it's not like this is our thing for today and I have planned this out. And no.
We have storybooks that are Christmas storybooks. We have.
And those came out like, I think, after the second Sunday of Advent this year. Like some years we get them out, boom, the beginning of Advent. And some years we just kind of.
We're very organic.
Yeah.
It's just whenever the things come out.
It happens when it happens.
We do the Advent candle right from the start of Advent. You know, Advent candles
this year
on the
we
table.
Did. There have been years when it has not happened at the start.
Usually because we didn't have candles.
Right. Like,
but then we finally figured out get the pillar candles. We talked about that before. But yeah.
Well, my parents figured out get the pillar candles. I did not figure this out.
Right. Right.
Let's be honest.
And then, the candles becomes the Can Daddy Light all of the candles with one match before burning himself. So it becomes a competition by the end.
Right. I'm sure that's really
that's a real organic, preparation for Advent.
Organic part of Advent.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to be able to do like go to lessons and carols and go to La Salette for the Christmas lights, you know, as one night. And
this seems to me as sort of aspirational for like when you have teens, maybe.
Oh, we said that when they were toddlers.
I know. You know what?
This is about the time that we can start doing it. We had some external issues we don't want to get into. We had some things that kind of held us back a bit. Some stuff that we had to deal with. And I think that put a damper on some of the ability to take care of that.
Right. I mean, it's been, honestly, December has been very busy. There have been lots of appointments. We, you know, dentists, orthodontists, doctors, this and that and the other. And it's been kind of like,
it's been
I feel
a busy
like I've
December.
Already been kind of busy.
Right. So I think that's been a part of it. We've been trying to get to La Salette for the Christmas lights and we were going to go, you know, one night and that just never happened. And another night never happened. I mean, hopefully we'll get to it before they shut it down at what, New Year's? Do they shut it down? Or
No. It goes through New Year's. Yeah, New Year's.
New
Year's Eve is the last.
It would be nice to get there, but we might not get there because there's so much else going on. I don't know what if other people have the same sort of thing, but, you know, Christmas just sort of shows up.
Right.
You know, I mean,
the nice thing about Christmas, actually, for me, is that it does show up. Like,
right.
No matter how prepared or not, it gets here. It shows up.
Right.
And I know I've been pregnant several times during Christmas and not had any energy to really do much. I mean, gosh, when we first moved in here, I was like very, very beginning of the first trimester and sick as a dog. And Christmas was
last thing on your mind. Then, yeah. then there was the year that Lucy was born. Her birthday is right after and Christmas. And you were sick and about to give birth.
Oh, yeah. I got the stomach bug and was pregnant.
Yeah. So even to the point of having to delay the C-section, right?
Yes. Yep. She was actually delayed for several days.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's the way it is. I mean, it's just that's a natural, organic way of things. And there's no sense getting, worried about it. We're also so laid back when it comes to celebrations. Like, neither of us are very rigid when it comes to how we celebrate a thing, and it has to reach some level of accomplishment.
I'm not terribly attached to a particular like tradition or way of doing things for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess that's how I would put it.
That helps. So speaking of which, Christmas Eve is well for folks who are listening, it might be here. For us, it's a couple of days away. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about what we do. Do we do anything particularly special during the day on Christmas Eve?
During the day, I'm usually like finishing up Christmas baking and cooking and stuff. Like,
you're making some challah.
Yeah, this year I'm hoping to do that tomorrow, which is actually Christmas Eve. but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm on Christmas Eve. I'm like running to the store for the last minute. You know, oops, I forgot that. But yeah, the day is kind of just like
the one thing we do during the day.
What?
I go to Lobster Barn with several or all of the kids.
Cause that's getting into our Christmas Eve dinner tradition.
But that's one thing I do during the day, but you were going to say other things you do during the day.
Yeah, just like whatever last minute preparation things need to happen. Really.
I really need to wrap some things.
Yeah, I usually do that like after the kids are in bed at night, watching like a Christmas movie or a show.
Yeah.
Just something I can watch that I don't have to pay close attention to, so because my hands are busy. Otherwise, I like stop rapping and start watching.
Like A Christmas Story or It's a Wonderful Life. Those
are your Christmas movies.
Well, I thought you liked those movies.
I watched them with you.
Okay, don't even tell me you don't like It's a Wonderful Life. Don't say a word unless you're going to say you like it.
It's a good movie. I would not voluntarily put it on like every year, but it's a good movie. I'm not the kind of person who watches the same movie every year. Like, yeah, that's just not
that's
me.
True. I just got done saying we're not really like super into the ritual of things.
Well, you are much more than I am.
I do have some rituals.
You have these rituals.
I have rituals. Things that should be done. All right. So that's the
movies
day.
Movies are not my thing.
Yeah, so that's the day. And then for evening, for dinner, as I hinted at with Lobster Barn, being Sicilian, we never actually did this when I was a kid.
We're trying to resurrect sort of a Sicilian tradition.
And folks may have heard of it. It's the Feast of Seven Fishes. And we don't particularly adhere to Sicilian dishes of fish, you know, seafood. I mean, that's a lot more work. Maybe someday. But we kind of, and we don't always hit seven different fishes.
No, it's just kind of like a multiple fish dinner.
Right. So as the name implies, and because we live outside of Boston near the coast, we have access to lobster. And so we go, we get lobsters for everyone, except for Melanie. She's the only one who doesn't eat lobster.
I'm not a huge lobster fan, honestly.
Then we'll also get some shrimp, which you've already picked up at Whole Foods.
I did pick up some shrimp.
And then we'll have usually something like maybe crab cakes or stuffed clams or scallops if they have them.
I like scallops.
Yeah,
and sautéed in like a little wine.
And maybe a piece of fish. Did you want a piece of fish this year? No. Sometimes, some years you get it. One year we tried to make bacala stew, the Portuguese fish stew out of the salted cod, bacala. That didn't come out very well.
The recipe was not.
It was not a good recipe. We need to find a better recipe because I want to try that again, not for Christmas Eve. But the trick with that is it's a lot of things to cook, a lot of different dishes, especially the lobster, and eating lobster takes time. And so, really, that's one of the things I like to get cooked earlier, and then set aside to cool and eat at dinner time.
Right.
And then once we've got all that eaten, then we can clean up because the night is not over at that point. But as far as the dinner goes, so we'll have lobster, we'll have shrimp, we'll have clams. And because of all of this, I only get one lobster. I mean, normally if I'm having a lobster dinner, I'm going to get two. But
to people who live not on the coast, that seems like incredibly
indulgent.
Incredibly indulgent. Lobsters here are not.
They're a lot cheaper.
They're not luxury items. I mean,
it's like a steak. It's like a Costco steak. So at this time of year, they're a little more expensive. But like in the summer, you can get them for $6. Like a decent lobster for $6. I mean, remember that time in Maine where I got five for 25, I think it was?
Something like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cheap. This time of year, they're a little more expensive because they're a little harder to come by. And French people love lobster. They ship tons of lobster to France every year this time for Christmas. Isn't that weird? Kind of funny. And so...
I had a roommate who was from Minnesota who always flew home to Minnesota for Christmas. And her tradition was to buy lobsters...
At the airport?
Or on the way to the airport. Like the big styrofoam container.
Yeah.
And she would take her family lobsters from Massachusetts every year.
What if you can do that now? Like TSA?
I don't know.
Can you fly with the lobster? Like,
I'm pretty sure she did it after 9/11.
There's more than 4 ounces of liquid in those lobsters.
I don't know. I thought she did it after 9/11. But I'm not sure.
I mean, those claws are like weapons. Could use those claws to get into the cockpit. Sorry. So
the Sicilian tradition was originally, of course, people didn't eat meat during Advent, like Lent.
Right.
And so... this was like a feast, but also still not eating meat.
Yeah. Yes. Although Sicily is an island, so there was access to a lot of different kinds of seafood.
Right.
And there are some really good dishes. In fact, you gave me that Sicilian seafood cookbook.
Yeah, we should pull that out.
For Christmas one year. Yeah, we really ought to pull that out and look at some stuff in there. So dinner's done. We clean up, and there's a lot to clean up when you're eating lobster. So we clean up, head the kids off to bed as quickly, as early as we can. Because they're in bed, we're wrapping things and
last minute wrapping last presents. Minute,
yep, watching a movie. Because what time do we get them up? Because we're going to midnight mass, and we've had disagreement on when we should get them up. I always tend to be like, get them up early. That's my thing.
Right. Whereas I feel like let them sleep as long as possible and get them up with just enough time to like throw their clothes on and then rush out the door.
Now, given that we're going to the early mass now, where that's kind of how we do it every Sunday, I think that actually...
it actually works.
It works. Like, I think I'm more mentally prepared
for that. We leave the house at 7:30 to go to mass.
It's a 15-minute drive.
I usually don't start getting the kids up until like 7. I mean, I kind of try to like make noise before 7 to sort of like noise.
Right.
But I don't actually go in and like wake them up and yell at them until 7.
Right. So if we got them up at 11, we could get out of the house by 11:30.
Yeah.
And
because... Which seems way early because the church is not that far away and there's...
Well,
there's no crowds.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I know our church does not have a crowd for Christmas Eve, midnight mass.
No.
Unlike a lot of churches. But
my parents' church, you have to get there like an hour early before mass.
Well, and they have lessons and carols before even that. The reason we need to get there early is because they're going to serve.
Oh, there's that, I suppose. Right.
And there's there's something about these Vietnamese sisters doing a presentation at 11:30.
That I felt like there was no details about what do you mean by a presentation? What? Like, are they giving us like a
lecture? Are they doing a nativity play? What are we getting? A concert?
Are they asking us for money? I mean, like presentations to me, like at church makes me think of like
it's
the
finance, be a PowerPoint up front.
Right. Like the finance council telling us about like. What the budget parish budget is, but
these Vietnamese sisters, which they're not part of the parish. They're coming in from the outside. We don't have Vietnamese sisters in the parish. I don't know what this is.
Although
the bulletin didn't say anything, did it?
I didn't peruse it closely, but I think there's some sort of connection because I've heard of the Vietnamese sisters before. Like, I'm not sure.
It's one of those things. We've been in this parish for more than 5 years. And this is one of those things where there's this body of knowledge that everyone in a parish is assumed to have that maybe, like, all the insiders have it, but not everybody is as inside as other people.
Right. Like, I remember when we were at our last parish at St. Joseph, they would always announce that such and such a meeting was happening at
St. Charles Hall.
And I'm like, where is St. Charles Hall? Is that over, like, over in the school? Like, I don't know where St. Charles Hall. St. Charles Hall was the basement under the church. Yes. But there is no sign anywhere on the premises that says this is St. Charles Hall. So this was like super deep insider baseball knowledge. Like the parish basement was called St. Charles Hall.
Well, you know, obviously everyone remembers that time when someone gave money and they renovated it and they called and they had a dedication for St. Charles Hall. Well, that was like, remember we were looking for a parish to go to before we ended up at St. Edith Stein, and I looked on one church website nearby us, and they said the church is closed for renovations. All masses will be held in Resurrection Hall, but there was nothing on the website that told me what Resurrection Hall is.
So we never even tried them out.
We never went
because I don't know where Resurrection Hall is, and I don't feel like showing up on Sunday morning
and
for mass,
wandering around,
and wandering the property looking for.
I mean, it might not even been on the property. Maybe even like somewhere else, like another church. Even, I mean, who knows? It's like people don't think about the people that they're trying to communicate with. That's a huge thing for me in church communications. Is you've got to put yourself in other people's shoes.
Not everybody has been at this parish since they were in first grade, or not everyone was baptized here.
Even the people who are baptized, they may not be on the inside. You know, they may not be really super connected with everyone else and just know what things are. Yeah. So, So those are, so Christmas Eve, we go to mass. The kids, Bella and Ben probably will serve, I think. Well, it depends on whether Father wants them to or not, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
we are very loosey-goosey altar server stuff here.
Right. Because we've had a changeover in pastors, and because previously the altar servers seem to have all been trained by the Cape Verdean priest for the Cape Verdean masses, and I'm not sure what they were doing for the English masses, we don't really seem to have a lot of, and then our current pastor changed the mass times. There never seems to have been drafted an altar server schedule.
There aren't enough altar servers for there to be a schedule. I think that's part of it. That when I was a kid, like, you served maybe a couple times a month at most at one of the masses, one of the four Sunday masses, because there were 30 or 40 altar servers.
Whereas what we have is, there were no altar servers, and Father came up to us after Mass one day and said, do you think some of your kids could possibly
become altar servers?
Think about it. Pray about it.
And then for a couple months, the two girls from the Cape Verdean Mass were coming early to help our kids to learn.
Right. So they were kind of there to prompt them. And today was the first day when neither one of them showed up. So it was just
Bella and Ben on their own. Doing it, and they did awesome.
They did.
They did great. But yeah, so it's like, it's sort of like, I don't know what happened. Like, are we supposed to tell them, like, if we go on vacation, tell them we're not going to be there, like, or just not show up? Like, there's not like it. Like, again, when I was a kid, you'd get a schedule and it would say where you were. And if you weren't going to show up, you had to either get a replacement or call and leave a message. And I mean, it was very serious.
I think that if we were not to show up, then probably the Eucharistic minister who has sometimes filled in would probably just fill in as.
Right. They're very laid back about it.
Yeah. I mean, she's also been the one who has kind of helped to guide the kids through what they need to do.
Right.
So I suspect she would just jump in.
Right. Or Father would just, you know, do whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Very laid back. Anyway, so I don't know whether they expect the kids to be there Christmas Eve or Christmas morning or whatever. We're just
I think that
up.
if they showed up and they put on the robes and
lit some candles, they'd be welcome.
Everybody would be happy that there were altar servers at midnight mass, and yeah. I don't know that anybody would say anything.
They'll probably get to use the incense for the first time. That'll be different.
Oh, maybe we should make sure Ben has his inhaler and Bella has her inhaler. Right. I'm not sure how the asthmatic kids will do with the incense.
Oh, boy, that would be interesting. So, and then by the time we get home, it's usually like 1:30, 2?
Yeah, we usually let them have a cookie, and then they just change into their pajamas and go back to bed.
Yep. which is a pretty good way of making sure they don't get up too early the next morning. I mean, I know like how some families, some kids are up like at 5:36.
After going to midnight mass, the kids are not.
They're like up at 8.
Actually, the problem is that they really don't want to do anything later in the day.
Right. So we end up probably sometimes we actually have to rouse them because we like, you guys got to go in here. But we get up and we got to get cooking. So we still have to get up early. And then we'll have our dinner and whatever and then go visit family. And by that time, it's time to go visit family. They're like, I don't want
to
go
by
anywhere.
The time it's time to go visit family, I'm ready to go take a nap because I haven't had a nap. And I'm like,
you've been up all night and day.
I'm like, do we have to? Can we just stay home?
No, we must visit family. So that's going to be our Christmas Eve. And I'd love to hear from other people. What's your Christmas Eve like? You know, what do you do? What are your traditions? What does your family do? Just, you know, that'd be cool. So let's move on. We've talked about this for enough, I think. Let's talk about our topic of what things we're learning. You've been listening to a great course. The great courses is this. How would you describe it? It's a program, a company, right?
Yeah, it's a company. They basically get professors from like
big universities,
big universities, like big name colleges and universities, and they get them to record lectures on like
interesting topics.
Right. Well, not just topics. I mean, it's a whole class, a college class.
Right. They get them to record the classes. Right.
And they do it like, I think they record it specifically for the great courses. It's not like they're going into a classroom at the university. They bring the professors in to a studio and they have them in a studio audience.
Right.
With a chalkboard and everything. But they're giving a lecture in front of a studio audience.
Right. And they're hours long. I mean, it's like a full college course.
Right. I think this one is like maybe 36 lectures of half an hour each. I mean,
that's a full course.
It's substantial.
Right. And so the one you're listening to right now
I'm listening to it via Audible because we have an Audible subscription and they don't cost any more. Like
it's one credit.
It's one credit.
If you have a credits, if you buy credits or you subscribe to credits,
Which is a great deal because this is, you know, for however many hours of class for one credit, like is the same price as an audiobook. So it's,
yeah. And what's the topic?
Oh, the topic that I'm listening to is called The Story of Human Language. It's basically the history of language from, you know, what we speculate about the very earliest people speak, the original primal human language to the great variety of what language is, what it does, how it changes and develops over time, where English fits into the great families of human languages.
How languages evolve, how we can track back languages.
Yeah. And all sorts of things about like other languages that you've never heard of. He's always throwing in, you know, explanations of languages from all over the world, from every continent. And it's fascinating. I love this lecture. The kids have been
really good.
I listen to it mostly when I'm like cooking. Sometimes in the car, sometimes just when I'm sitting around like folding laundry or doing something like that. Well, my hands are busy, but my mind is wandering.
Yep.
And the kids often are listening in. Isabella and Sophia have really liked some of the lectures. They haven't listened to all of them, and I haven't been like, I'm not going to listen to this unless the kids are listening.
Right.
Because then I would never
get, you would never listen to
I'd
it.
I'd never finish it.
Right.
But they've been listening along and they've been enjoying the lectures that they have heard. They've really enjoyed and they've talked about and, you know, we've had some interesting discussions based on it. So it's kind of a whole family learning experience, even though it's primarily my thing that I'm doing.
Right.
Because I'm interested in it.
Well, it's good. It's good you have interest. But the great thing is we now own it. And so as they get older, like high school age, this would be a great program, great course, great subject for them to take in a sense.
Yeah. I always kind of wished I had taken linguistics in college.
Yes. You're a frustrated linguist.
One of my grad school professors, his actual PhD was linguistics. And he somehow ended up washing onto the shores of Irish studies and taught both Irish language and Irish literature. So he was sort of technically in the literature department, but he also taught Irish language and he was great, but a lot of our Irish language class was spent not learning Gaelic, but learning about linguistics because he didn't really like our textbook, and he really just kind of didn't really want to be teaching. I think he was subbing because they had lost the professor who had previously been teaching the class. Anyway, I really liked the linguistics part, even though I was a little bit frustrated about not learning as much Irish as I had hoped when I signed up for the class.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to listen to this, to the great courses, and we'll probably get other great courses on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. He has actually suggested some related to topics we've discussed. So like great courses of the Egyptology ones are supposed to be really good, but they cover a wide range of topics, and I've seen them for years advertised.
Right. Now, occasionally Audible will have like little teasers, like just one lecture from the series that you can get for free or for like a couple bucks. And I think I actually, the first of this series, I listened to just as a one-off. Like,
so it worked.
And it totally worked because I said, this guy was really good.
He's very engaging.
He's funny.
It's the opposite of dry.
Right. He's very funny. Like, you're constantly laughing. He does funny voices, and he speaks in all sorts of languages and then apologizes for how bad his accent is.
He gives all these really engaging examples. Like, it's not just all theory. He gives like really like definitive, like you can, oh, I understand because you've walked me through it.
Right. Like I said, the kids are following it and finding it interesting because it really is very approachable while at the same time really getting into some depth.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's good. And I'm looking forward to doing other ones that we could find. This is Dom Bettinelli, CEO of SQPN, with a special message. The StarQuest Network is fulfilling its mission to explore the intersection of faith and pop culture. And in the past year, we've reached stunning new heights. Our programs are reaching broad new audiences with a message that helps us discern good entertainment, make sense of the world, and share the gospel with others. We continue to launch new shows and bring back great shows. We just relaunched Secrets of Star Wars, which comes at the perfect moment to capture the excitement over the new show, The Mandalorian, and the climax of the new Star Wars movies. The support of our audience is vital to this work and has helped us grow closer to meeting our financial obligations. For that, we are very grateful. But we still need to close the gap. Every new gift extends our deadline, but until we eliminate our deficits, the future of StarQuest and your favorite shows remain in question. This is why it's crucial we hear from you this Advent and Christmas, the time when nonprofits receive most of their support for the year. If you're already a supporter of StarQuest, we are very grateful, and we ask you to prayerfully consider increasing your support at this time. If you are not yet a supporter, please become one now. We urgently need your help, and every gift counts. Could you give $15 or even just $10 per month? That lets us provide more than 40 hours of professionally produced shows with compelling content. We have special thank you gifts for donors at several giving levels. If you are a business owner or just want to provide a leadership level of support, we now have a special giving level for sponsors, like in public broadcasting. For $500 per month, you or your business can sponsor one of the shows on our network. Listeners will hear a message in every episode thanking you for your sponsorship and giving your website. We'll also have your name and link on the SQPN webpage and in the show notes of every episode during your sponsorship. Whatever level of support you can offer, whether large or small, please show your support for SQPN this Christmas, and remember that your gifts are tax deductible. Just go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. And may God bless you and yours as we approach the celebration of our Lord's birth. So we already talked about what we're having for Christmas Eve. We didn't really talk about what we've eaten this week, which is probably not worth talking too much about. Because
have we eaten this week?
We did have the Veracruz with cod. Was it cod we had?
I think it was halibut.
Halibut Veracruz. So Veracruz sauce. We got to kind of tell her. I mean, it's a particular sauce from Mexico, but the recipe that we have comes out of a cookbook, right? That you got. Is that the Fonda?
I think it's from the Fonda San Miguel cookbook.
There's a restaurant in Austin that is a fancy Mexican restaurant. I mean, this isn't, you know, tacos and burritos. They have tacos and burritos, but that's fancy tacos and burritos.
No, actually, I don't know if they even have tacos and burritos.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's Mexican food.
This is a white tablecloth, like,
fine dining
restaurant.
Mexican restaurant.
And they do mostly not border like Tex-Mex, but they do interior and coastal cuisine.
Right. And and we've gone there with your parents a few times.
It's one of my parents' favorite restaurants. They go
every in the. I think I've been there twice, and it was excellent both times. Anyway, one year they gave you the Fonda San Miguel
cookbook,
and in it was this recipe for Veracruz sauce, and it's the simplest sauce, and so very. It's one of my favorite dishes. It's a canned diced tomatoes.
So you slice up an onion into like slice it in half and then make it into slices like
right.
half rounds and saute that in olive oil. You dump in a can of diced tomatoes and
it's like a half a cup of.
So you slice up some green olives. You slice up some sliced pickled jalapenos like those stuff from the jar. You just kind of chop it a little bit and then some capers and you throw in a bay leaf and some. Oregano, and that's it.
And you just simmer it for a while and then serve it over rice and fish, and it's so good. I mean, I really it's so simple and so good. And so most of the kids don't like it. I think who liked it this time?
Sophie
liked it. So, you know, we don't have it very often, but we had that.
We used to have it more often.
We did. And that's about it. Like you had a craving for a burger last night, so we went to Red Robin for a burger. You know, I mean,
sometimes you just really want a hamburger.
So you want a good burger, but also just the craziness we talked about before. It's been hard to have meals that aren't just like throw some chicken thighs in the oven and you know just this. It's the same old things that we've been having lately. We're kind of stuck in a rut. We're trying to get out of, but we talked about that last time that the rut. One thing that I've been doing this week to get into the spirit of Christmas, because you stopped at the store and bought candy canes for the tree.
Uh-huh.
I know some people, they just have the same candy canes year after year. They just throw them back in the box.
Really?
Well,
they get gross.
I don't know if that's some people. My family did. My mom used to just throw them back in the box. They were just one of the decorations. They'd all be broken and like she'd eventually
she
have to
didn't
throw
let
them
you
away.
Eat them or you just didn't want
no,
to
we
eat
didn't
them.
Eat. She didn't let us eat them.
She would not let you eat the candy canes. Like, don't eat the candy canes?
I don't think she would say that. We just didn't. There were decorations on the tree. Like, you know, we didn't have lots of sweets when I was a kid. It's just not a thing. To look at me, you wouldn't realize that. But, yeah, we just had candy canes that came out of the decorations bin. I don't know. It just was. So
I'm really baffled by
this. They would break into bits, and she'd throw them away, and she'd replace them. But so what I was doing this week is I've been taking a candy cane and stirring my coffee with it, getting a little peppermint in my coffee, a little in the spirit of the holiday. And Lucy has been like, she's been all over this. She thinks it's the greatest thing ever. She thinks because it's so transgressive. You're dipping a candy cane in your coffee. Like, that is so weird. That is so off the wall, man. Like, she was real. She thought it was hysterical.
I guess I missed this.
Yeah, she was doing that this morning while you were doing the crossword. But she just thought it was so funny to watch it dissolve in there. But I've been doing that. That actually tastes pretty good. Although, it doesn't get us a very strong peppermint flavor. I kind of wish it had a little more peppermint flavor to it. But that's it. I mean,
you could get some peppermint cocoa.
I could. Yeah, could. So let's just talk. So that's what we've been eating. Let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. I want to mention that I went to see Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker with Father Chip on the opening night Thursday. We did this for a podcast for the Coffee and Cinema podcast, which you can find at sqpn.com. We give our first impressions. We come out of the theater, we sit in his car, and we talk about what we just saw and what we think about it and first impressions. We give a spoiler free bit and then we give a warning and then we talk about it with spoilers. But here's the problem. Now I can't talk about it with anybody here in the house until we all see it.
We haven't seen it.
And I don't know when we're going to get to see this. We were looking at movie times and it's like,
the theaters are booked. What we should have done.
There's seven of us, and so
we should have like just like you booked your ticket early.
We should have booked it.
We should have booked
way
everybody
back.
Else's tickets.
We should have just We should have just picked the day at the month and a half ago that I bought the tickets for me and Father Chip. I should have bought the other tickets at the same time, and I didn't. So we've got to figure out when we're going to do this. It's looking like next weekend at the earliest to do this. And I'm going to go in a little crazy. They're going crazy. And I'm like working hard to avoid, you know, having any spoilers show up on my screen while they're standing around. And, you know, because there's articles and YouTube videos and all this stuff talking about the spoilers now, because that's the world we live in. Everyone wants to spoil it. It's just so frustrating. But it was my brief review, spoiler free review, is it was awesome. Don't listen to the naysayers. It was a fitting end to the Skywalker saga. I laughed, I cried. It was better than Cats, which actually has a special resonance this year.
This year, that there's a little tinge, sting barb to that one.
Yes. Frankly, what isn't better than Cats, the movie?
Evidently, everything.
Everything. Oh my gosh, the reviews are just hysterical. The reviews of Cats.
I have no plans to see it, but I am definitely enjoying reading lots of reviews.
Not everyone knows that line, by the way. I laughed, I cried, it was better than Cats.
Is that from, like, Saturday Night Live?
It comes, I'm not sure it's Saturday Night Live. It comes from some gag from the early 80s where someone was doing, like, street interviews as people were coming out of a theater having seen a play. And
was it a play or a movie?
A play, because Cats was a play.
Right.
And they're coming out of, like, it was a Broadway play, and someone with a microphone, what did you think? You know, sort of like those man on the street ads they used to do, like of someone coming out, giving their first impression. Oh, it was wonderful. You know, oh, I loved it. So it was an ad for some play. And so someone said, I laughed, I cried. It was better than Cats. And that has stuck in some of us. Some people remember this. Right. At the time, it was big. People would say it. I've always said it.
I have no idea where it came from. I know it.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things that just is stuck in the consciousness of the society, of the culture. But I always say it. I laughed, I cried, it was better than Cats. Like, it's just like a thing I say. But I tried to track it down once, and I think I found the original commercial advertisement for it. Now it would be impossible to find, because if you tried to Google Cats, it would be...
You'd just get noise.
You would get all the reviews of the bad movie. Bad movie, bad. Well, anyway, the other thing I finished reading this week is a Star Wars novel called Resistance Reborn, which takes place just after the events of The Last Jedi. So Rise of Skywalker apparently takes place about a year after the events of Last Jedi within that universe. And this takes place within the first 6 months, this book. And it's how does the Resistance come back from the events of The Last Jedi? And it really focuses on Poe Dameron, that character. And how he becomes a leader of the Resistance. And it was very interesting. I liked it. It was good. There were some weak points. I felt they were trying to do something with Poe and Finn that just didn't... It was... I don't know. It just wasn't working. And it was unnecessary. It just didn't need to be there. But other than that, it wasn't like in your face about it. It was hinting at things. But otherwise, it was a pretty good book. There was a you know, a good plot, convoluted plot. One of the things that I didn't like about it was that Rey and Finn were weirdly in the background. Like, Rey and Finn are, at this point, you know, in this trilogy, are the main characters. I mean, let's face it, they're the characters. And they were weirdly disconnected. It was Poe and Leia were the main characters in this book. So it was kind of odd in that sense. And when all this action was happening, you know, Rey would be in the room, but she'd just be kind of standing off to the side, doing nothing, saying nothing. It was weird. But other than that, it was all right. It was an okay book.
Okay.
It was fun to fill in the gaps a bit of the... And one of the reasons I read these is because as the movie Rise of Skywalker is coming out, these books, the stuff that Lucasfilm puts out, these all fit in the story. They are made to be part of the story. So if you want to fill in the gaps, this helps.
I have never read a single Star Wars book in my life, and probably never will.
I've read dozens.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of intrigued by the idea that there's like more of the story, but at the same time, I'm strangely reluctant to actually read any of them.
I get it. I mean, I
couldn't even explain why, but just not.
And then there's nothing else like it out there, like in any of the other fandoms. Like, there's like Star Trek novels do not necessarily fit in with the movies or TV shows. In fact, the movies and TV shows, frankly, contradict them. They're not paying attention to the novels. They just do whatever they want. And then the novels get like cast off into, you know, they're like, and frankly, they reboot the universe and, you know, they contradict the stuff that the TV shows that they already had with the, you know, when they rebooted with Chris Pine and those guys. So they are not concerned with canon, but Lucasfilm, they have a guy who's in charge of making sure everything fits, like all the different.
I can appreciate that. I like consistency.
It's the best job ever. I would love that job. It would be the coolest job ever. But they're really intent on making sure that things don't contradict, that everything fits. Anything that's said in an officially licensed and published book or comic book or TV show or movie, it fits within the universe and is not a contradiction. You have to take into account.
That seems like really, really convoluted.
I can't imagine how hard it is to write a book in that, like, especially as time goes on, as that universe gets deeper and deeper, how you could possibly, like, it has to be a collaborative process where people going through, oh, by the way, you know, here's this character that you can't do that with that character, or that place already exists and it's this, you know?
Well, yeah, but aren't most like books that are written within a particular, like a pre-existing franchise, kind of collaborative efforts? Like, authors do not have free rein to do whatever the heck they want.
But there's more and less control. Like,
right.
Again, in a Star Trek novel, they have, as long as you're not killing off Kirk, you know what I mean? You know, or, you know, before his time, you have a pretty free range. There are some limitations, but much less rigid. Like, if you invent a planet, that planet doesn't have to be in somebody else's book. You know, if you say something about, say, a race like the Andorians, and you make up something about their culture, if someone writes a book that includes Andorians in 5 years and it contradicts it, they're not going to say, no, you can't do that. They just let it go.
Right. Okay.
Which is a little frustrating in itself. I kind of like the Star Wars way, but it's kind of interesting, which is why a few years ago when Disney bought Lucasfilm and they threw out all of that stuff that had been done after between Return of the Jedi and when Disney bought it, all the books that had been written, they got all shoved into something called Legends. In other words, this stuff doesn't, we don't have to account for any of this anymore. They had a clean slate. And they subsequently brought some of those things back in, but not everything. Mm. Very interesting. Anyway, so you told me you finished a book this week.
I have not finished.
Or you're still working
on
it.
I'm almost finished.
Almost finished with.
Yeah, I kind of stalled out and started reading something else, honestly. It's called Children of Blood and Bone, and I was really intrigued. The author is, I want to say Nigerian-American. And so it's set in a very African culture, but a fantasy world where it's not, it's clearly not our world. Sort of imagines there's a kingdom in which there are certain people who are born with magical talent, and there's clearly a genetic component that you're born with white hair, and that means that you are a magic user. But prior to the events of the novel, there has been the king has found a way to like cut off magic, and magic no longer exists, and he has killed most of the magic users in the kingdom. And so now the story is basically about several characters' quest to bring back magic. And there are a lot of things I found really intriguing about it. The system of magic is really interesting, and the sort of the history of the world I really liked, but there's one thing that's just kind of bothered me, and it's been hard to get past, which is that it's all told in the first person narrator, but there's three narrators. And so you go back and forth between the sort of the three main characters' points of view. And so this chapter will be in one, and then this next chapter will be a different point of view, but it's all first person. And so unless you're paying attention to the name at the top of the chapter, they all kind of sound similar. I felt like it was kind of disorienting, and I just really wanted third person narrator after a while. But that's just kind of my own personal preference. I guess the trend in young adult literature is very heavily first person narrator. Hunger Games did first person narrator, and I think lots of other books do. And I just find it distracting after a while.
It's interesting that it's the first novel of a trilogy, apparently.
Yes. And a friend of mine just finished the second novel of the trilogy and is not even sure she wants to read the third novel.
Mm.
So I don't know if I'm going to pick up the second and third books.
It's listed as a YA novel.
Right. And I felt like it.
I have thoughts about the idea of labeling things YA novels, frankly.
Right. I feel like there are certain traits in the novel that I can see are definitely kind of within that YA genre. The characters, a lot of the conflict is driven by characters who don't communicate well with each other. And that kind of tends to drive me crazy. Like, just tell him what you think. Just tell her.
Right.
Why on earth would you not spell it out? Oh my goodness, you're driving me crazy, you stupid people who don't talk to each other.
But the other thing is that it's been picked up in a movie deal. They were going to make a movie out of it.
I think that this could make a really interesting movie.
It was announced, although, to be clear, they announced it 2 years ago that Fox 2000, which is a small part of Fox, was developing it. Fox 2000 has been acquired by Disney. Fox has been acquired by Disney, and Fox 2000 is being folded in.
So that might be put on a back burner.
It might be. Yeah. Mid-budget elegant tastemaker films is what their portfolio was called.
I'm not sure what that means.
Mid-budget. So not super, not blockbuster.
Blockbuster.
Elegant tastemaker films. Interesting. Anyway, they made The Woman in the Window, Hidden Figures, which is about the women, the African-American female scientists at NASA for during the Apollo missions.
Right. That I'm kind of meant to see that.
The calculator.
Sounded interesting.
Yeah. It also made The Fault in Our Stars, The Devil Wears Prada, Marley and Me, Love, Simon, and The Hate U Give. So who knows what that means for the stuff that they had in development. It may or may not be still in development.
But I am very intrigued by the idea of this sort of African universe where it really doesn't have much reference to any cultures outside of Africa. There's a sense that there are cultures out there. There are other countries that they know about which have had their own trajectories with magic. There's kind of a sense that maybe things haven't gone so well in some of these other countries with magic. The magic is kind of problematic. So anyway, that kind of makes me want to read more if there goes into that, but I don't know.
Hmm.
But I like the idea of sort of non-European, non-Western takes on what magic is, where it comes from. This really feels like a sort of a fresh, different approach.
Right. I mean, frankly, there hasn't been a lot that comes from African culture. We've had Asian stuff from Asia, some, but right. From African culture would be interesting. And South American would be interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm just looking up news about the movie. I'm just kind of curious now is the movie still in development? Apparently, it still is under Lucasfilm, maybe?
Hmm.
Which is an interesting idea. Anyway, we should move on. Was there? I think that's about it, actually. I think we've kind of covered everything we want to cover. It is late.
It is late. I'm tired, and I should probably
go
get a good early start on the morning tomorrow.
Yes, we have a big couple of days ahead of us, so we have a lot to do.
Pace yourself. It's all about pacing.
Well, before we finish, I do want to, as we always do, take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets and for us to raise the bets, because frankly, it's our patrons who pays my salary at SQPN, and so we are doubly grateful. And today we're thanking Bruce G., Kathleen H., Jerry G., Kevin K., Joshua G., and their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you had any thoughts or comments on anything we talked about, you can let us know by going to sqpn.com/bets or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets, B-E-T-T-S, at sqpn.com. And links to books and other things that we've talked about will be on our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. If you could, please remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page, or retweet us at on Twitter where we're at SQPN and leave comments. All of the social media engagement helps us get the word out and juices the algorithms so that people will actually see the stuff we post online and help grow the audience, which we greatly appreciate. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest. And remember, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
She said it.